Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leffin with Wendy Snyder. Welcome to the show. A short show today because of White Sox baseball. White Sox baseball will take place. Well, the pregame will take place at 11:30, the game a little bit after that. But welcome to the show. Wendy, I have to tell you right at the outset of the program, I have failed you. I have failed the listeners. I failed everybody.
What?
There was a story last night that fascinated me about this window washer. I'm sure you saw it on the news. Who had something of a mishap while on the 53rd floor, and he was dangling, and they had to save this guy, and I saw footage of it on the news, and I said, what better guest to have today than that window washer? I would love to talk to him and find out what he was feeling as he was just hanging there 53 stories above the air.
What do you think he was feeling?
Something along the lines of, just a loud scream. I couldn't find his name anywhere. I started looking yesterday after, well, last night, a little after it happened. I got up early today. I'm thinking by the time the morning rolls around, his name will be somewhere. I can't find his name anywhere. So we will not be having him as a guest.
Where's intern Jay? Jay the intern.
He's the guy who
He'll
normally...
He'll find him.
He's the finder of lost guests. I don't know where he is either.
I was trying to track down that coyote guy, and I heard him on with John Williams yesterday.
Yeah.
It's hard to find people. It should be so easy in this age of social media.
You would think with the internet, where you have access to all information, but somehow this guy's name has eluded everybody. To be fair, I didn't see him. Like, on the 10 o'clock news last night, I'm like, this guy's going to be all over the news at 10 o'clock. They did the story, and they showed footage of him dangling in the heroic rescue to save him, but you couldn't find him anywhere.
He was still laundering his pants.
Oh, man. Here's a question. Let's say that happened
to you. I crack myself up, I'll just tell you.
Let's say that happened to you.
It wouldn't.
Well, because you're so safety conscious?
No, I wouldn't ever do that. And then I found out how much they made, which is not very much.
How much did they make?
It was like 26 bucks an hour, wasn't it, Bertrand?
No! That's after a new contract. You know, they went on strike recently.
That the guys who do skyscraper window washing, that's what they make?
Yeah.
It's what we found in the stories, anyway.
Yeah, because then John Williams was doing the math rather quickly, saying that's about 50-ish a year, 50,000 a year, but then to take out taxes and everything. And I believe Lauren Lefka said, yeah, and then when the devil puts his hand in your pocket and pulls out more, you make less.
Well, I'm also guessing you probably pay a higher insurance premium than most of us.
Oh, I think the employer does.
Yeah? Yeah, I guess. But, all right, so here's my question. Let's say, and this is a parallel universe where you are a window washer, because I know that in real life you would not accept that role.
I do like washing windows, but not that high.
If this happened to you, would you continue with that job? Would you say to yourself, well, that was a once-in-a-lifetime thing, and now it's happened to me. It's not going to happen again. It doesn't happen to anybody twice. Or would you never go up and do that again?
Yes, and here's why.
Why? Yes to which?
Yes, that I would continue doing
it. You would.
Because, I mean, look, when you get in a car accident, do you never drive again? I know some people have PTSD.
There's some people that are done with it, yeah.
But, I mean, you know, things happen in life.
I guess. I just think if it happened once, it would so scar me emotionally, I couldn't get back up there.
You are a man of odds. The odds of it happening again are...
Yeah, I know.
Yes. I think I'd keep washing windows, but they would just have to be on the first floor. Like, I would get everyone started.
And on the inside only.
Right. Okay, you guys take it from here.
You know, you've scolded me because every once in a while during the show, a window washer will show up. We're on the 18th floor, which is very, very high.
It could be higher, but
so,
yes.
This guy was three times as high.
I mean, seriously,
I have a hard time just approaching the window. I hold my hands out for balance, but these guys are on the other side of the window. So you have scolded me because if I see a window washer, my first instinct is to wave at them.
I know, you turn into a little boy. Hi, sir.
I'm happy to see them.
A little kid waving to an engineer in a train.
Yeah, I know. It's very reminiscent of that, but I'm happy to see them. And then in my head, I'm like, I would hate to have a job where I see people all day and nobody acknowledges me. But then you always say, what if just waving at him throws his balance off?
I believe you got reprimanded. Was it you or Ryan Burrow?
Ryan was with me, but I was reprimanded.
Okay, so I don't care what you do. I think it's cute. But you ran into someone who's a window washer.
Yes.
And said, yeah, I was waving.
I'm the guy that waves at you.
And what did they say?
His boss said, if you could not do that, that'd be great. And I said, because why? And he goes, because it really messes with them. You know, they want to do their job. They don't want to be acknowledged, which I appreciate. But if it happened right now, if there was a guy out there, I would still wave at him.
Do they look in the obviously, they look in the
windows.
That's
why they take the job.
Yeah, don't you think they do it because they want to be alone? You know, it's kind of a solitary job. Or are two people on there at a time? But it just seems to me they want to, you know, it's a solitary job. You're up in the air all by yourself. You don't want to see people and waving at them.
I guess.
Yeah, but you got to check out other people's business, too.
Yeah, it's worse than a solitary job because you're staring at people all day.
It's very voyeuristic.
You can't, right. I mean,
right.
And that's uncomfortable. Like, if somebody catches you staring at them, you have to smile or something. He's looking in because he just wants to see what's going on.
I bet every window washer who's been doing it for some amount of time has seen something they're not supposed to see.
Hey, if you're a window washer, 312-591, what's gone in your head?
Sorry, 981.
That's our window washing hotline.
You're going back to National Radio Day where everybody was posting like their first jobs and stuff. I refuse to participate in that because I want to know when it started. It's a hoax. 312-981-7200. Not if you're window washing right now.
Right.
But if you're on break,
in the recent past,
you're sitting on a beam right now.
But don't you think if you do that all day, every day, and people don't expect to see a guy outside of their window, at some point you're going to see something you weren't meant to see.
Although if I lived in a high rise and I was in some kind of compromising situation and I saw ropes, that would give me a heads up to close my blinds.
Well, it depends on the situation.
I think that's how they get away with Bertrand. Only paying them $20 an hour is they go, plus you get to see anything you get to see is on the house.
You get to keep in your brain.
Right. That's part of the plus.
He's okay, though, right?
He is okay, but I want to interview the guy just to say, how fast was your heart beating as you're dangling all that?
He walked up the building like the Green Hornet, right?
Right. Yes, he did. That's amazing to me. 53 stories up, and they made him go up. Like, if it were me, I'd go, could I head downward instead of upward? I would much rather go downward than upward, slowly, not quickly.
Yeah, I'd more power to him. I'm more worried about the construction guys that are walking on the beams on the top of buildings being constructed. I don't know how that happens.
I don't know how you do that.
But they're making more than $26 an hour.
Yeah. I'm shocked that's all they make. That's not enough.
847 thinks a lot of people would go back up. Heck, people get remarried all the time, and to me that's 1,000 times more dangerous.
Larry King story coming your way next. All right, we'll take a break, and then there's a lot more show. We're at 312-981-7200. Give us a call or a text. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. White Sox baseball coming your way. Pregame with Andy Mazur at 11:35. The Sox and the Minnesota Twins. There was a gentleman in Tennessee. The school district called him a legendary bus driver. 76-year-old David Wright passed away last week at the age of 76. He retired last year. He only got 1 year of retirement. After 50 years of serving the Wilson County School District as a bus driver, he was inducted into the Tennessee School Bus Driver Hall of Fame in 2017.
Well deserved.
That same year, he was named State Bus Driver of the Year. And when they buried him, they honored him because of his long tenure of a school bus driver, and he was buried in a school bus-themed casket.
Oh, so, I didn't know such a thing existed.
Well, it's custom made, of course, and I would just like to know what custom made casket you would like to be buried in.
Oh, that's tough.
Isn't that a tough one?
I remember in one commercial for Count Chocula cereal, they showed Count Chocula's casket, and it was stunning. A very chocolatey, marshmallowy, puffy looking casket.
You can't eat the casket when you're dead.
Oh no, I understand. I know that. But I just think the Count Chocula casket is an interesting idea.
This looks like a yellow school bus, but it's a casket. I would like to be laid out in Svengoolie's casket.
Yeah. I hope he's got a backup. I hope.
I'm sure he does.
Wendy, several people weighing in on this guy who was dangling yesterday here in downtown Chicago. On the 53rd floor, some scaffolding gave way where he, you know, that thing that he's on that goes up and down, you know that thing. Is that a scaffold? It's a scaffold, isn't it?
I don't know. A scaffolding in my vision is in place all the time.
I don't know what the right word would be.
A moving beam?
A moving beam.
I don't know.
No, I think you're right. So there was a mishap, and he was dangling for a while. They saved him. I wanted to get him as a guest today. I can't find his name anywhere. Here's a text from 63. Oh, several people, by the way, say they know that the person's name is Windex, which is a joke. I know it's a joke, but three different people texted that in. How did that happen? This is 630. I used to work roofing when I was younger. I've seen people having sex, pleasuring themselves, cross-dressing. Once I saw a girl leaping out of a low roof, assuming that somebody came home earlier than expected.
Oh,
so obviously someone was having an affair. Yeah. Yep.
Does that make anybody want to be a roofer?
Not me.
And here's an idea. If you know that a roofer is on your roof,
you should be on your best behavior.
Yeah. I have skylights. When we got a new roof,
yeah,
I wasn't home. Right. I left.
That's a smart move. I mentioned a little earlier Larry King. I'm sure you've seen this story by now. Larry King and his wife, Sean, are getting a divorce. Very sad news after nearly 22 years of marriage.
Wow.
But that's, by Larry King's standards, that's a long time.
Has it been 22 years?
Yeah. For the current wife, Sean.
Sean, goodbye. All right.
That's very funny. This, by the way, will be his seventh divorce.
Can I just throw something out there?
Yeah.
After one, maybe two marriages that don't work out, and sometimes they don't.
Right.
Why would you keep going? And how old is he?
He is ageless and priceless.
No, he's not.
That's what Sneed would have said.
Why? He is 80. Oh, he's only 85.
Yeah, he can still get married four or five more times, Wendy. Don't cut off his marriage supply.
He's about halfway done, probably. Hey, can I give you guys a quick update,
especially for
listeners in Wilmington, the Wilmington area? There had been a manhunt for a carjacker, started in Dalton, ended in Wilmington early this morning. The police there now say they have apprehended the man that they were looking for. So everything...
I've been listening to this all morning, and I know it was a work in progress.
Yeah, excuse me. So everything's returning to normal.
All right, except your voice.
I don't know what's going on here.
Well, so, you know, the Larry King story is hitting us all in our own way, Steve. You can't control that. That's emotion. It's all right with that.
22 years of marriage. Go, like, you know what? Give yourself three more years. Chances are you're going to outlive him.
Oh.
Why would she bail now?
Don't you think that once a person gets up into that range, the divorce five times, the divorce six times, the divorce seven times, it's not the people you're marrying. It's you, right?
There's something to
blame,
that.
You can't blame all those women. At some point, you got to go, I don't think I'm very good at this.
So again, why do you keep going?
Right, right. Save everybody the hardship and just realize that marriage is not for you. Wasn't he involved, if I'm wrong, I apologize, but I'm almost positive I'm right. Wasn't he involved with this woman, Sean, his wife's sister, for a while as well? Didn't he and Sean take a break and he was with Sean's sister for a little bit?
And you're surprised the marriage is ending?
I'm not that surprised. Actually, that's the safest bet in Las Vegas, is to bet that Larry King's marriage will not survive.
TMZ, this was back in 2010. TMZ has learned Larry King's marriage fell apart in large part because Sean Southwick believes Larry is having an affair with her sister, Shannon Engeman.
Oh.
But Shannon says
she
it wasn't
says no.
true.
But I saw pictures of them together. Or maybe
doing
it was
stuff?
The Crypt Keeper from HBO. I'm not sure who it was. I thought it was Larry King. I could be wrong, though.
He's the one who filed for divorce.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Wow. Took him 22 years to figure out she was a gold digger?
Yeah. I think that's his longest marriage. I'm almost positive. But he's just not good at getting married and staying married. Now, a friend of mine who's been married three times, which, in my opinion, that's a lot, you know, he says that he loves falling in love.
That, think back about it, that is the best time. It might be the most nerve-wracking time, like when you and Terry just started dating, the butterflies in the stomach, it's kind of nerve-wracking because you don't want to say the wrong thing, but that's the best part of it.
But doesn't everybody loves falling in love?
Yeah.
But the key is falling
staying
in love.
Staying in love is hard work,
well,
Bill. It does take work.
I guess it does, but if that's the only thing you're interested in is the act of falling in love, then do that, but just don't
commit.
Follow through. Don't, yeah.
You know, when we were growing up, that's what you did. You know, you got married, then you had kids. Now things are different. If I had to do it all over again.
Be careful.
No, I mean, I would pick Jim and still be with him.
Okay.
But, I mean, there's, I don't know. I guess you save money on taxes. I don't know. Just sometimes I don't know.
You would have lived together? You would have married Larry King?
But does marriage mean what it once did? It does to me, and it did when I got married. But now that I think about it, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like marriage is not
that
what
the
it
value
used
isn't
to.
Yeah. What it was.
Yes.
Well, probably starting with a generation ago, it became more dissolvable. People realized, oh, I only live once. If it's not working, let's get out of this. Whereas years ago, people, you know,
I only get married once.
People suffered for the rest of their lives.
And we were happy.
Damn it. Well, he went down to dinner in his Sunday
best. Excitable boy, they all said. Wendy, we legally can only play that song for one guest, David Hochberg.
Good morning, everybody.
Hi, David. Nice to see you.
Good morning to you. How low are the interest rates?
Boy, they're in the threes.
Are they?
Been busy. Got 46 calls yesterday.
Yeah.
Record
all
day.
Prank calls or some legit
from all your friends.
Yeah.
So you know, it was like a clown circus.
You shouldn't give your number out. Yeah,
David Hochberg is vice president of lending of Team Hochberg at Homeside Financial. We just refinanced a week before the rates went down.
Yeah.
Can I just say timing is my middle
horrible
name?
Timing. Okay. Horrible timing.
It'll be
what
fine.
Caused the rates to go down? I'm not complaining. I'm thrilled for it. But
no.
Why? What happened?
I turned the TV on today and heard a couple of the talk show hosts saying that 75% of the economists that they interviewed. You'd say that we're in line for a recession or going towards all the signs.
Do you believe that?
Yes, I believe that.
Based on what, David?
We've had a 10-year run, and typically the economy runs in cycles, and a good cycle from what I'm hearing and reading and what I learned in college, it runs anywhere from 7 to 10 years, and we've had, you know, we've been on a good 10-year run. And, you know, the economy slows down, and you got to juke it up with lower interest rates. And I could tell you here in Illinois, we've been talking about it for years, okay? Real estate taxes are drowning people.
Yes.
That is the worst of it.
Yeah.
The cost of just living here in this state. I talked to a guy in Elkhart County, Indiana, Saturday morning, and he laughed at me. He's like, which typically people all over the country laugh at me,
yeah,
which is fine.
Not
right?
With you.
Right. Just laugh at me. He's like, hey, I live in a $250,000 home. I have a $100,000 mortgage. I want to pull out $50,000. I want to put in a pool. I'm like, great. Okay. So, you know, this, that, and the other thing I started doing. I'm like, okay. I started asking him all these questions. You know, how much money you make, social security number, all this stuff. I go, what are your taxes? He goes, $900. I go, a month?
What?
He goes, $900 a year. And he started laughing at me. $900 a year in Elkhart County. Indiana.
All right, what's the difference? I mean, I don't
know.
The difference? We have better schools in Cook County. I don't know.
I'll tell you what the difference is. We have a layered, corrupt system here of 700 units of government, which is absolutely ridiculous. And the people in Indiana, and he told me that he's very politically connected in Indiana. He's like, we laugh at the people in Illinois for all the taxes you pay.
Right.
And then he texts me back. He's like, oh, I'm sorry. I overstated. It's really only $856.50.
It's not $900.
It's not $900. So he's paying more in homeowner's insurance
than he is in
real estate taxes.
That makes me want to throw up.
And
go ahead.
Why don't you bring in, I keep saying, bring in Jack Franks.
Yeah.
I'm being 100% serious.
Yeah.
Jack Franks is trying to eliminate government and shrink government in McHenry County. He's actually dropped real estate taxes by over 10%. Okay, I would love to have Jack Franks in one chair and Tony Preckwinkle in another and say, Tony, you know, Ms. Preckwinkle, why is Jack Franks to your left or to your right able to cut taxes in McHenry County and we can't do that? And why do you continue to raise property taxes here in Illinois, you know, in Cook County? I don't understand. And what's happening is people are now going back to school.
Right.
We're getting calls from your listeners every single day.
Yeah.
30, 40, guy yesterday, $65,000 in just bills.
Yeah.
Just a Chase card. I talked to two doctors yesterday. $1.5 million home. Okay, I'm putting them into an interest-only loan. I'm saving them $980 on their mortgage payment. Instead of paying down their principal, they're going to take it. We're paying off $68,000 worth of credit card debt. And these are two doctors making pretty good living. Jeez. Okay, $600,000-$700,000, you know, great income, $60,000 living in a 1.5.
Yeah.
So it's not just in the trucker and the blue-collar guys and gals out there. You know, and they're like, we're paying on their home. I'm not going to tell you where it is. $35,000, three G's, $36,000 a year in real estate taxes. Like, it's crazy.
There are a couple of states out of the 50 that don't have sales tax. When we go to Maine every year, we go to New Hampshire for a day or two, and there's no sales tax there. And everything's great in New Hampshire. The roads are in perfect condition. Perfect the schools are fantastic.
Do you mean a price on the little menu board is exactly what you pay? Yeah. It's no additional?
Yeah.
Shocking. I don't even understand how that can work.
We get our groceries there in New Hampshire.
No tax.
And there's no tax on
anything. There's no tax in Pennsylvania on clothing.
Well, they pull it off beautifully.
It's unbelievable. I'll tell you what, all this gas tax, and you know, I know it doesn't snap your finger, you pay 18 cents more a gallon, they start fixing the roads.
Yeah.
I brought my car in for service. I have tire insurance. Every single one of my rims were damaged.
Yeah.
Okay, thank God I paid. I have low-profile tires, whatever, right? Every single one, the guy's like, yeah, your car's done, but your wheels are kind of messed up. I'm like, what's wrong with my wheels? He's like, every single one of your wheels... We got to bring the wheel straightener guy out here with his truck and straighten your wheels out. Every one of your wheels.
Yeah, because of the way the roads are.
Of the way the roads are screwed up. Best thing I did was get tire insurance, okay? So
I got that, too. It makes a difference. Yeah.
Especially here in LA. So the challenge that we have here is interest rates are super low. People are loaded with debt. Values have come back. And that's the only thing that people have to tap into. Okay, so I had a guy right now, we did 85% cash out FHA. He's like, I don't want to do an FHA loan. I go, well, that's great. Let's see, how much money do you make? 120 grand a year. I got this coming from here and that coming from there. I'm like, send me your taxes. So he sends me his taxes. His 120 turns into $83,500. I'm like, okay, so I just lost 30-some thousand dollars of income that you said you had, but your accountant's not reporting. Well, I've got these 1099s. I'm like, I'm fantastic. I'm glad you got the 1099s. Mm. Your accountant didn't put any of that income on your tax returns, and I can't use it. So guess what? We're going FHA 85% cash out. We're blowing out all this debt. We're saving them like $3,000 a month. I'm like, stop worrying about the vehicle. We'll get from point A to point B. You blow out all your nutty credit card debt that's soaking you and weighing you down. He's working three jobs.
Yeah.
And you know, 50-year-old guy, he's exhausted.
Sure.
Right? I know that feeling, right? And he's just killing himself. I'm like, forget about what loan we're putting you into. Look at the debt. He's like, well, I want to go into a Fannie Mae loan. I'm like, well, that's great. But if you go into a Fannie Mae loan, A, you don't make enough money. And B, we can't pay off enough debt for you to qualify for the loan. And C, it's not happening.
Yeah.
So forget about it. Mm-hmm. This is the only plan that you got.
Explain FHA loan, Federal Housing Administration.
Oh, okay. Federal Housing Administration. They write rules to do loans. You've got another, I think, what is it, the 21st day, 9 days? Because you used to be able to do cash out refinance up to 85% of the value of your home. It was one of the few places you could go to do that. They're dropping that down to 80% for all FHA case file numbers that... up until the end of August. So on September 1st, you could only do cash out up to 80. They're restricting that a little bit. VA loans, you used to be able to do cash out up to 100. They're restricting that to 90, which is fine. Okay, so it's limiting the amount of money. It's going to strengthen the program a little bit. The best news that they finally came out with, we've been waiting this for 10 years, is, and this is a huge game changer for all your listeners, FHA is going to start doing spot approvals in condos. So before, when everything went kablooey in 07 and 08, FHA, we used to be able to go if you needed a reverse mortgage or if you were a first-time home buyer and you were buying in a condo building that wasn't FHA approved, we used to be able to submit a request to FHA, say Tom and Sally are buying in 123 Gold Coast Lane in Chicago. Can we get it approved? Wait 24 to 48 hours. Get, okay, Tom and Sally are good to go. You could do a loan in that building. Great, Tom and Sally, we're your loan. After the mortgage meltdown, they locked it down, said every building has to be approved by FHA before you could get a loan, an FHA loan. That destroyed experienced homeowners for reverse mortgages. So this is a huge shout out. Starting in October, and I think it's on the 15th of next month, we're going to be able to start originating loans in condos for experienced homeowners to do reverse mortgages, which we probably turned down, no exaggeration, probably 10 experienced homeowners a month. You know, we'd get
what
two
does
or
that
three,
mean, experienced homeowner?
62 years, 51 and 61 and a half years old and above.
Oh, okay.
You need to qualify for a reverse mortgage.
All right.
We've had 70, 80, 90-year-old individuals living in their condos for the past 40 years. Mission Hills in Northbrook's a perfect example. I had a nice lady, 85 years old, living in a $300,000-$400,000 condo, ran out of money, and the only thing she had was her condo.
It was paid off.
It was paid off. She completely outlived all of her assets, and she can't make it on her $1,234 a month of Social Security. Okay, so we're going to locate this lady's number and say, hey, get in line. Let's go. We can now help you. We can do a spot approval in Mission Hills or in other condos. I'm not picking on Mission Hills. I'm just using that as an example because it happened. It's right around the corner from where I live in my office.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened to my voice there. I think you got excited.
That was your Bill Leff impression.
I know. It's my Bill Leff impression.
How do you know if you need an FHA loan or a regular loan?
It depends on your credit score, your down payment. Okay. Listen, if you had a bankruptcy, a Chapter 7 in the past 2 years, okay, you're going to go FHA because you need to wait 4 years to go Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. If you had a foreclosure in the past 3 years, you could go FHA. Fannie Freddie wants you to wait 7 years. Okay, so
God, this stuff just confuses me. That's why I have Jimmy Mack handle it.
Yeah, short sale. You got to wait 4 years. Fannie Freddie, 3 years. FHA. So there's a lot of different, if you have a bankruptcy, you can pay off a bankruptcy with an FHA loan. Chapter 13, you can pay it off. You can't pay it off with the Fannie Freddie. So these are a lot of different programs out there, but the biggest one is for the homeowners out there that are 61 and a half years and older. If you are living in a condo that you wanted a reverse mortgage and you couldn't get a reverse mortgage because your condominium association didn't want to get FHA approved because they didn't want those type of people, whatever that means, you know, living in their homes that have already been living there, now it's a total game changer and we could help a ton of listeners.
David Hochberg is here. Were you tempted to name your kids Fannie and Freddie? I bet you were.
Yeah. It Fannie, been fun. Freddie, and Penny. You know, Penny Mac. Fannie Mac, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Penny Mac.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. We'll take a quick break and then more. If you want to jump in, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And we are chatting with David Hochberg, Vice President of Lending at Team Hochberg at Homeside Financial. A lot of people text, you know, this is just a commercial. I just want to put your name out there because honestly, David, when we were going to refinance, we didn't know all the options that were available. You are a wealth of knowledge. Yeah. And if you can help someone, you will. If you can't, you'll tell them that.
Here. It's not a commercial because we used help your listeners and other listeners take out over $1.25 million of their equity. So this is an educational opportunity.
For
your listeners that if you have equity in your home, maybe you could reduce your monthly payment over $25,000 a month like we helped those listeners that we closed last month who took out the $1.25 million of equity out of their home to pay off car loans, student loans, credit cards, installment loans, help their kids go to school, pay off second homes, pay off higher interest rate loans, pay off higher interest rate mortgages. Okay. And then we've totally saved listeners in the Chicago market and that could hear us over $106,000 a month. Okay, so if you think this is a commercial, that's fine. That's why Baskin-Robbins is 31 flavors. But this is also an opportunity to you, Texter, instead of being negative, to maybe call your lender to see if you could take advantage of these lower rates. You don't have to call me. I mean, you know, there's hundreds of thousands. My NMLS number is 136675. Okay, there's other NMLS numbers that are higher than that and lower than that. So call somebody that's got an NMLS number who's background checked by the federal government to make sure you're not getting picked off and take advantage of these low rates. I just bring these examples up so your listeners could potentially, if they want to use me, great. You want to call another lender, call another lender. But the information we give is valuable.
You wouldn't get it anywhere else.
If you've got a mother, a father, a sister, an uncle sitting in their house, okay, I'll tell you right now, I'm doing Kegel exercises. I'm doing lower body now. I'm working on my core. I can, and I'm doing it right now. And we're doing videos after I get off the air. But here, I've got people. You got to pay extra.
Right.
It's WGN.com.
This is why some people don't want to call David.
This
is just part of the fun.
And the people that do call now.
Yes.
But here, the point I'm trying to make is that you've got thousands of your listeners right now giving their mom and dad $500 to $1,000 a month to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And three of them are listening right now that I talked to a year and a half ago. that dad was in his 80s, living in a $400,000 home free and clear because mom passed away a couple years back. Each one of them are giving dad a G-note to survive. Dad needs a new roof, 15-20 G's on his house. House is worth over 400 grand. The guy's in his 80s. I'm like, what are you doing? I'm like, each one of yous are giving them 12 G's that you don't have.
Yeah.
And I get it. You can't say no to your dad. I understand. But your dad's living in a $400,000 asset that he could gain access to, over $200,000 worth of the home's equity, to take care of all of the needs that the house needs. That didn't sound right. To take care of all the upkeep in the house and maybe hire a service provider to come in to take care of him.
Right.
Clean the house, make the food, maybe cut the grass,
right,
shovel the snow, whatever.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with that. Here's take the information and use it any way you want.
David, here's a good question. And can we get Mr. Hochberg a hot towel, please?
Yes, I need a cold towel.
Cold one.
What is the difference between a home equity loan and a home equity line of credit?
Yes.
Which is best? They say, I only need $5,000. What is the difference in which is best?
That's a great question. Home equity line of credit, and I use the folks at Republic Bank is who I send it to. So if you need one, I'll hook you up with those guys. We have a whole team over there that helps our team out. I get nothing from it. It's just an introduction. Home equity line of credit is a checkbook against your house. You could write a check, you could pay it back, and you could continue to dip into it and pay it back.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a variable rate loan based upon the prime interest rates.
Yeah.
Typically, the banks will do it for free as long as you don't shut it down within 36 months. You have to pay them a yearly annual fee of $50, $60 or whatever, and it's a checkbook against your house for emergency reasons. When's the best time to get it? When you don't need a line of credit. Why? Because when you need a line of credit, it's usually an emergency, and you don't have a job, or you're out of a job, or you're short of a job, or you lost a job, and you can't get it. Okay, mm-hmm. I've told hundreds of people within this industry right here in the radio industry, what are you waiting for? Go get a line of credit, because it's not like you have the most stable, you know, industry in the world,
right,
that's going through consolidation. So yeah. A home equity loan, typically the rate's higher. It doesn't adjust. You want $5,000, you're going to get $5,000, and you can't go back. And if you pay it off, you can't go back and take more.
Wow.
So, and typically it's a little higher in an interest rate. I like the flexibility of a line of credit if you're going to pay it back. Great thing is, the line of credit, your rate just dropped because they dropped the prime interest rate again.
Yeah.
So that money is a little cheaper.
Is there a limit on the line of credit? Is there a certain percentage that you...
Typically, they'll go to 85 to 90% of the combined value of your home. It's the combined value of your home. So here's a learning lesson for the people that think this is a commercial, which frosts me. Okay, so if your home is worth $100,000, right?
Yes.
Here's your learning lesson.
Yes.
And you've got a $60,000 mortgage.
Yes.
Your loan to value is 60%. $60,000 mortgage against $100,000 property.
Yeah.
Most lenders will go to 90% combined loan to value. $60,000 first, $30,000 second. 60 plus 30 equals 90. 90 into 100 is 90%.
Yeah.
So in this example, you'd be able to get $30,000 line of credit.
If you need it, you don't have to use it.
You don't need it, but get the most that you qualify for. I'll tell you who this is another perfect learning experience to Mr. and Mrs. Negativity Dexter. If you plan on moving in the next couple, 3-4 years, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of people have their home paid off or need that extra, want to buy another home before they sell their current home.
Yes.
That line of credit can be used as a bridge loan for the down payment on your new place.
Ah.
While you're carrying costs on your current place.
That's valuable to have.
All right, we are really out of time, but if you can get a quick answer to Matt. Matt, you have a great question, and I'm sure we can't answer it in a minute, but go ahead.
Hey, David, I was just curious. If you're able to pay off your mortgage, should you? Why or why not?
Yeah, my 16-year-old daughter just asked this question. Okay, so
it's a great question.
Yeah, should you? It's a personal preference, right? I've got 3.375 on my loan. I got a loan 7-8 years ago when everything was low. I'm making more money giving the money that I could be putting into my mortgage into another investment opportunity that's earning me more than 3.375%. Okay, so that's just me. So I use that money that I could be applying towards my mortgage. I think it's like $1,142. I round it up to $1,200 just to whatever. That's all I do. I just round it up. Other people have a mental block that they want, a mental goal. It's not a block. It's just a financial goal. They want their mortgage paid off.
They want to own their home.
And they want to own their home. There's nothing wrong with that. So, you know, go ahead and pay it off.
Is it on taxes then?
I can't give tax advice because I'm not a certified financial planner or CPA. I would address that with your accountant. Some people lose in certain income brackets, you lose the tax deductibility of the interest. And if you paid your loan down so much anyway, you're really not paying any interest on your loan. It's mostly principal. So it's a personal preference. Some people, like me, I use the extra money instead of paying down my 3.375% 30-year fixed, investing in other safe opportunities that's earning me more than that. But other people just want to be mortgage-free. If that's what you want to be, pay it off.
Matter of preference. Matt, thank you so much for your call.
Thanks, Matt.
And if you have any more questions, how do people contact David Hochberg?
855-56-DAVID, 855-56-DAVID, or go to 56david.com.
Do you still do kids' parties?
I still do. I'm merging into. I bought a balloon-making company.
You did.
Kid balloon-making, not the adult. Adult they had to close down.
He financed my kid's Little Tykes house in the backyard.
Yeah,
that's
awesome. Amazing. Yeah. Thank you, David.
Thanks, David. Right,
bye, David Hochberg.
Thank you, Steve. It's Phil Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Welcoming in one of our favorite guests, Dr. John Duffy. John, you're one of our favorite guests.
Wow, that is flattering
to
hear. I had no idea, by the way.
Change your resume.
I thought it was difficult to have.
No, I think we like having you on.
I think we need you. I think that's what it boils down to.
The new book is available.
The new book is available.
I spoke
for pre-order right now.
Oh, just pre-order.
And I have copies here for each and either of you guys.
Oh.
It actually will be shipped on September 15th.
Very exciting. And the book's title is?
Parenting the New Teen in the Age of Anxiety.
Excellent.
It's long enough that I have to read it.
So if you pre-order now, you want to go through Amazon or any book supplier.
Right, and any book supplier, it should be out there, yes.
All right. Before we get to the real tough subjects, I want to ask you something that I think you'll appreciate because I know how much you love baseball.
Yes.
This is very quick. It doesn't have to be a long, involved answer. I'm just curious.
Yeah.
John Lester pitches for the Cubs. He's one of the most consistent pitchers in Major League Baseball.
That he is.
But if you hit a ground ball to John Lester, he cannot physically throw the ball to first base. He's got some mental block about doing that. What's at work there? How can that be?
Yeah. And why isn't everyone hitting it to him?
Yes.
Right.
Why doesn't everyone bunt the ball to John Lester?
Well, I think strategically the Cubs have found an end around that in that John Lester will pitch outside so that the catcher can get the ball to Rizzo very quickly. But that's baseball.
Yeah.
In terms of what's going on in John Lester's head, I do a lot of work with younger athletes. I've done a little bit of work with professional athletes, but they'll often describe this blind spot in their game, in their sport, in their run that prevents them from being everything they want to be. I worked with a distance runner who would get to the end of a half marathon or a marathon, see the finish line, and then pull up, be winning his age group, and then pull up and 10 people will pass him when he gets close. And there's just kind of this psych out moment of, ooh, I don't think I'm a winner like this. There's something playing in his mind, thought that says, I don't think I can do this, even though it's right there. And so I will sabotage it. And I think there's a little bit of that going on. If I were to analyze John Lester from afar.
Yes.
And if John, you're listening, please listen closely.
Yeah.
I think you're psyching yourself out and you're convinced that you can't make a throw that objectively we know you can make. But, I think you got psyched out a couple of times when you overthrew Anthony Rizzo in one direction or another. And if you do that three or four times, you start to convince yourself, oh, I'm not good at that. And you create this rhythm in your head and this belief system that suggests you can't do that. And the sooner in professional athletics that you believe that, word gets around fast.
Yeah,
you want to steal second on Lester.
Yes.
All right, so if you're Madden, don't you say, you know what, I want you to throw to first. I don't care what happens, just do it once. Would that help?
Not only would it help, but you'll probably remember this. Last year, a couple of times, he threw to Rizzo, and he didn't even throw hard. He just lobbed it, knowing that the guy had taken a big lead and that he would get this guy out. So he got two outs last year, I think, or maybe three.
Did he throw the ball in his mitt one time, too?
Yeah, he took his glove off and threw the whole glove.
He threw
the
entire mitt and ball together. I think he needs more of that, Wendy. If he does more of that, and part of it is practice, like just reminding himself that he can turn and throw, and the more he practices that, the more that cognition will dissipate. But if he doesn't do that, and they just accept, like, okay, this isn't your thing,
right,
then that becomes his career. You know what
Does
I mean?
Does this exist outside of sports? Because we know that there are kickers that can be frozen where they're not able to hit a field goal. And in basketball, there's guys who just cannot hit a free throw.
Sure.
So other than sports, though, does this happen to people in regular walks of life?
Absolutely. If you think about families and how they work, I will get parents who come in and they'll introduce their son and they'll say, he's not my athlete or he's not my math kid. And the minute you create this shtick around a kid, they begin to adopt that. And they think, you know, well, I can write a decent paper, but I cannot memorize the Pythagorean theorem.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And the reality of all of that is that's probably a false limitation that we're placing on people, you know?
But when we grew up, our parents said that about us, because I might have said that when they were younger, like, this is my athlete. This is my smart one. And then you realize, boy, that's stupid, because you're giving them the title that they may break later on. But our parents did that to us, and we just know what we learned from them.
Absolutely, right. And most of us were able to kind of mitigate that and focus on what we believed our strengths were, but there are probably more strengths we're leaving on the table that we're unaware of, that we think, like, this is just a deficit I need to work around.
This is fixable, though, right?
Most all circumstances. And even if some kids will come to me and they'll say, I've got a learning disability, or I have profound ADHD, so I clearly can't do well in school, for example. And that's not what those things mean. You know, that means, okay, I have this challenge,
right,
and I've got to find a way to mitigate this, you know? But there are ways to mitigate it. There's ways to think about it, and behavioral things you can do to mitigate a lot of these difficulties. So, you know, I think the more we think in terms of strengths, and even the idea of, I think I can beat that difficulty in the John Lester vein, you know, I think I can pass around this and make this work if I do enough practice.
It's just so fascinating because he's got such amazing control when he's throwing a farther distance from, you know, the pitcher's mound.
That is so weird.
Yeah. Doesn't make sense.
Well, it creates a superstition in his head, right? He begins to believe the mythology that he can't do this because too many times he hasn't. And I love Joe Maddon, but too often I think he kind of buys into that and decides, like, we're going to work around John in this regard instead of just doing what you're suggesting, Wendy. Like, give him practice. Let him make a few of those.
Yeah.
And we were talking about things we learned from our parents. Parenting has changed quite a bit since we were parented, but there are a lot of people that want to stay old school with the parenting.
Yes.
Can we talk about that when we come
Absolutely.
Back?
I would love that.
All that's ahead. It's Bill and Wendy with John Duffy.
To argue, parents just don't understand.
Parents don't understand. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We're visiting with Dr. John Duffy. We're going to talk about his new book that comes out next month, but you can pre-order it. We got some texts. We were talking about summer's over, back to school. My kids started this week, and I said, God, summer's easier for me because I don't have to wake up teenage boys to go to school. And someone texted and said, you know, let them get themselves up. Once they're late a couple of times, they'll figure it out. Don't be a weak mother.
Oh, wow.
That stung.
That's
I'm
a pretty
not a
harsh
weak
judgment.
Mother.
No.
And we don't parent like our parents did.
No. It's completely different than it was a generation ago. And we have to remember that there's some good in that, right? So an iron fist was pretty handy a generation ago,
right? It totally
worked. Yeah, it worked in my house. It worked in most people's houses where a little bit of fear was not... It was useful. It was a useful parenting tool. Now, kids are pretty savvy. Kids are onto us, you know, like...
And they're lawyered up, John.
They're literally...
Kids all have their own attorneys now.
Bill, you are so close to reality. I mean, I've heard kids invoke the DCFS number so many times in my office. Like, you know, if you don't let me take tomorrow off, I'm telling you, I know it's a 1-800-25-ABUSE.
Right, right.
You know? And it's light, but it's still like they're lawyered up a little bit.
I know.
And so the opportunity for parents now isn't about being a weak parent. It's about, like, you can connect with your kids and be allies with them, because I think a lot of us would argue there was an adversarial element once we were teenagers, at least in our household when I was growing up, and most of us do not want that vibe with our kids, in part because that vibe doesn't just go away when you turn 20. So a lot of us, I always ask people, like, how many people are excited when I talk to parents to see their parents on Thanksgiving? And hardly anybody raises their hands because they're like, well, I'm going to go out of obligation, but I'm not excited about it, you know?
Wow.
And so the different vibe I want families to create is I want that to be a lifelong relationship that they're starting to create with their kids at really young ages. Does that mean being a soft parent with no consequences for actions? No. But does it mean being friendly with your kids? Yeah, it means that. It means like you don't have to be their best pal.
But and you shouldn't be.
No, but it doesn't have to be adversarial either, or you're all the way on the outs. And if you're on the outs, you can't be an ally during all the stuff your kid needs you for.
And so the new book is called Parenting the New Teen in the Age of Anxiety. There's a lot of anxiety out there right now. I know at one of my kids' schools today, there's an assembly on school shooters.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, we didn't have to deal with that.
No.
Does that add to all this anxiety?
Like you wouldn't believe. So a lot of kids that I work with will not be in school for that assembly because the assembly itself raises anxiety. I may have shared with you guys that I worked with a mom of a very young child, kindergarten, first grade, who had a bad kid drill, which is effectively that kind of assembly, that kind of drill. And she realized, oh, my locker's really close to the door. The bad kid's going to see me and kill me first.
Oh, my God.
And this is like a 6 or 7 year old, you know? So, yes, kids are really anxious for a lot of reasons. I mean, that's one of them. And they're aware of it. You know, you think back to my son was 4 or 5 when Columbine happened. And, you know, I was able to turn off the TV. I could control that narrative. Now, with your 4 or 5 year old, they're going to know. They're going to know what's going on. They're going to hear it from friends. They're going to see it on a notification on an iPad. You really can't protect your kids from all the terrible things that are happening.
So arm them with information.
Yeah. You arm them with information and some degree of comfort, especially when they're young. That, you know, like, we want to make sure this doesn't happen anymore. So people are working really hard on this. But, you know, that's why you're running through the drill.
John, isn't in a case like that, isn't the amount of information you divulge to your child on a can handle basis? And by that, I mean, some kids can handle more than other kids. So you have to know your own child to figure out how much reality that kid can stomach, right?
About the most important thing, Bill, you have to be super discerning about, like, okay, what's my child's age? That's one thing, developmental level and level of sensitivity to this kind of thing. And the best way to kind of wade easily into those waters is to be curious, is to ask them, you know, so these shootings, you know, what have you heard about this stuff? Yeah. What do you know? What's happening? What are you hearing from your classmates? That way you're not inundating them with something way beyond what they're capable of understanding and hearing and integrating. On the other hand, some kids at really young ages, 7, 8, 9, have really kind of in-depth questions about these things.
Sure.
And so I encourage parents, if your child has a specific question, answer the question. You don't have to give every gory detail, but there's some anxiety with having a question that goes unanswered, wondering, like, what is dad not telling me?
But with that little kid who figured out that the part where their locker is close to the door, you can't lie to them and say, this could never happen to you. This happened in another town, but it would never happen to you, because that's a lie.
It's a lie.
But you have to figure out how to palatably say it to the child to make them realize.
Listen, parenting today is a tightrope walk. It's very difficult, and the difficulty has shown up in the last 5, 10, 15 years. I think it's gotten far, far more difficult because of these kinds of issues and because there are no sweeping answers, right? You know, it'd be easy to say, here's what you tell your kid at 7, here's what you tell your kid at 10. But the truth of the matter is, if your child tells you, I'm the closest one to the door.
Right.
You don't want to deny that and say, no, honey, you're fine.
Right.
Because that effectively says, you can't talk to me about it. You know,
you know
you're not fine.
Yeah.
So you want to give them some comfort, but you want to arm them with some information too.
Right.
Like, yeah, this stuff does happen. That's why we have the drill, you know, and the idea is to keep you safe. And I'll talk to your teacher about that, you know, and make sure that you're safe. But you don't want to blow it off. Blowing it off creates anxiety for sure.
What do you think the percentage is of someone listening right now, of people listening, that like everything's going smoothly, like their kids don't have anxiety, they're not going through terrible teens? What do you think the percentage is of no issues at all?
5, maybe.
Honestly?
And in those 5, I would say, mom and dad might not know everything.
See, that's the question. Do you know if everything's going so smoothly, are you maybe just unaware? How do you tell when just a teenage kid is not just being a teenager and there's more?
Right. All right. So I think the norm these days is you're going to see some anxiety, some depression, some attention issues in virtually all your kids. It's an anxiety-inducing time. It's cultural and societal, and it's pretty sweeping. I don't know the kid who is entirely immune to that. So you can go into parenting knowing, like, this doesn't have to be pathologizing your kid. This doesn't mean, you know, psychiatrists and medication and, you know, the whole squad getting involved. But it does mean you need to parent with more intent and deliberation and discussion yeah. than you might have just a few years ago.
Yep.
He's Dr. John Duffy, clinical psychologist. His first book, The Available Parent, has helped me so much, and I can't wait to read the new one, Parenting the New Teen in the Age of Anxiety. You can go to drjohnduffy.com. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, guys.